Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son, how are ya?
Hey, Bully, great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got kids, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
This is a Crowd Podcast.
Sometimes the world can make you feel low, so come and sit down with my friend Joe and listen to the Mahler Show. Listen to the Joe Mahler Show. Whoa, oh, oh.
Oh, yeah, I think you can make that a bit longer.
Bit longer?
Just the last bit, like, Mahler Show. Let's make it everyone's show. That's why we hashtag grow the show. And there's been a number of people out there already that have actually remarkably been sharing the hashtag grow the show. I can't believe it. So thank you. Thank you for hashtagging grow the show.
Joe Mahler, I've got a question for you. The question is this. Would you rather be an international rugby player or an astronaut?
I guess being an astronaut is the peak in the job world.
I see what you've done. So clever. So clever. I mean, that might go over some people's heads. We are talking to Tim Peake, the actual astronaut.
I will definitely be asking him if that's his real name.
Why is there a chance it's not his name?
He's an astronaut and his name's Tim Peake.
Yeah, but he's not called Jimmy Space.
I'll ask him. We'll get the answer from him.
Listen, I'm officially pumped for this one. This is huge. Probably we're out of our depth. I think he's probably too classy, big, famous a guest for where we are at the moment.
He's not just out of our league, Tom. He's out of our universe.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah, but the International Space Station is still in our universe. It's,
okay.
It's only, I can say only. It's 250 miles above where we are now. It's just probably zipping over our heads. He's not coming from the International Space Station. He left it a number of years ago.
Or did he? Because, like, there's the space and time and light continuum.
Does that mean he's going to be late?
Steve, make sure he's here on time because I've got to get a train at 4. Do I need to do a countdown before he comes in?
Yes, please.
Beep.
10. No, it would take too
long. Start at 5. Starts at 5.
5.
That's still too... Just get him.
3, 2, 1.
3. Come in.
Countdown activated.
I'm going to have to burst your bubble because there is no countdown.
Oh,
it's so, it is
off.
So disappointing.
How do you know when it's going to go then?
It doesn't just like, it's sprung upon you, get a strap just to you. Oh, he's gone. He's gone. Just how many last minute? What's that?
Yeah. No, I was expecting a countdown like you would. But we have our Russian instructor who is in mission control, actually at the rocket launch pad. So he's not back in Moscow. This is out in Baikonur in Kazakhstan. And he's talking us through the engine ignition sequence. So we know when we're going to lift off because he's telling us, you know, engines at medium thrust, ramping up full thrust, 5 seconds till rocket lift in the launch pad. But there is no 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. And just when you want a really good countdown, you don't get it.
Surely you do the countdown in your head, no?
You do, I guess, because we have timers. Just a little plastic $2 timer that's velcroed in front of us.
No,
and you know we sync and we could all we're all watching the time, so we know to the second when the rocket is going to leave the launch pad.
Is that because you spent all your money on your £6 million? What was it?
$12 million for a spacesuit? Is that ballpark?
It's about $12 million for the spacesuits that we wear for a spacewalk. Yes. I mean, that's a mini space station. It's got to keep you alive outside for 8 hours. So that's expensive. The spacesuits that we wear inside the Soyuz, no, they're much, much cheaper. I mean, they're kind of soft fabric. Yeah, exactly. Throw away $3 million.
But still enough for you to not be able to afford a proper countdown
not
timer. Right, okay, so just $2 on that.
But no, what I love about the Russians is that everything is made as easy and as simple as possible. It's pretty much over-engineered. There's as minimal software, you know, because software can go wrong. So if they can make something with a physical valve or a switch or a dial or a button, it will be.
Let's say you can hear the rockets. Joe, can you do the rockets? That's it. Tim, what is going through your head? You're about to lift off into space.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
At this point, you are thinking a lot of different things. Huge excitement. It's a lot of noise, a lot of vibration. 9 million horsepower pushing you from underneath. So you're off. You're smiling, enjoying it. And at the back of your mind, I'm not going to lie, at the back of your mind, there's a little voice that's saying, I hope it all goes well.
How at the back of your mind is that? Because for me, if I was sitting in... I'm just trying to picture it. Are you sat back? Are you looking
you
up?
You are. Yeah, you're lying on your back. You're looking up at the sky.
Right,
you
the films.
Are. Yeah.
Good. So that wouldn't be at the back of my mind, that thought of, I hope I'm okay. I hope it goes well. That would be very much like here on my brow, through my eyes. Quite frankly, shitting myself.
You have spent so many years training for it. I mean, you know, it's something you really, really want to do. And you've been in the simulator. You've done all the emergencies under the sun. You know what to do if something goes wrong. And frankly, during launch, if something goes disastrously wrong, there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it anyway. So it's a case of enjoy the moment. It really is. It's excitement and it's adrenaline and it's just enormous amount of fun, you know, riding a rocket into space. To go back to that whole countdown thing, actually, to take our minds off that thought before we're being launched, we have music played into the capsule. And that is right up until the final kind of 2 minutes prior to launch. So we're sitting there very happy, just having a chat. We've done all our checks and procedures. And our instructor had put on the final countdown by Europe. And so that's blasting into the capsule. Very cheesy. But
yeah, that is. So no Prodigy. No, like...
In the space. What about a bit of David Bowie?
I had three tracks. I didn't choose Bowie, actually. I had U2, Beautiful Day. I had Queen, Don't Stop Me Now.
And, makes sense.
It makes sense. Coldplay, Sky Full of Stars. So
they're all very space related.
All space related.
Was that a theme?
It had crossed my mind. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was just accident, Joe. It just turned out they're all about space.
Thank you, Tom. I fucked that one up, didn't I? I mean, idiot.
You know when you walk out for an international, I'm not saying that's the same as being blasted into space, but I bet you have a little moment in the dressing room thinking, I'm not sure I fancy this. I do fancy this. Do I fancy this? Yeah, I've worked hard to get it. It must be like a tiny...
It's like funny you say that, Tom. Actually, I have several moments like that where, you know, instead of the rockets, I can hear like the sort of crowd noise.
Yeah,
or when we did have crowds, you're like, oh, God, what if it fucks up? What if I really... Oh, no, I can't do it. And then you're like, yeah, no, I do want to do it because you want that. You're chasing that buzz, sort of adrenaline thing. And I'm still incredibly surprised that Apollo 13 didn't put you off.
Yes.
I presume you watched that.
I
and
did.
Armageddon.
Apollo 13 is my favourite movie of all time. I love it. And it didn't put me off at all. I think, if anything, Gravity before doing a spacewalk was more nerve-wracking because... Apollo 13, if something like that goes wrong, there's really not much you can do. But on a spacewalk, the potential for you as an individual to mess up is huge, absolutely huge. And there's only two of you out there. You both rely on each other completely. And if you fall off the station, if you lose something, if you tear your spacesuit, there are just a million things where you can mess up and that's it. And I think that for the whole time you're out there, you're really aware of that. And so that's the time that I was thinking, come on, you've got to be on your game here.
Were you on the International Space Station at the same time as another man named Tim?
I was, yeah.
Was that an issue at all when you're on a spacewalk, someone goes, Tim, turn left. And, oh, not that Tim.
We never thought it was. Tim and I worked so closely together and we always knew almost exactly what each other were thinking because he's an American Army pilot as well, Apache pilot like myself, and we got on very, very well. People used to say, but it's going to be a problem. We're like, it's not going to be a problem. So they said, but don't you want to come up with call signs or do something different or change your names? We're like, no. So we went up there as Tim and it worked out just fine.
Yet another example of... pushing the limits and being an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
You know, living on the edge. It was like, I'm not going to change my name. Almost encouraging the rest of your team to
fuck up. You know, do you know what I mean?
Make it edgier.
That's how I'm reading this now. They're like, no, we're not going to change our name. We'll leave that to you lot to shit yourself about it down here.
We had a moment at the end of the spacewalk when Tim's helmet started leaking. Water was coming into it, which should never happen. And this sort of golf ball size of water was coming into his helmet. And someone was coming in with the radio. Okay, Tim, you're going to become EV2 now. And Tim switched to EV1. But we knew exactly what they meant.
This thing about, because there's not many of you on the ISS, and you must have to trust each other totally. But at the same time, you've all come from, well, you've got different nationalities, you've got different backgrounds. I've been reading loads about Apollo 11 ahead of our chat because it blows my mind every time I see anything about it, read about it. And the stuff that stuck with me was the relationship between Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins. So it sounds like Neil Armstrong was a bit aloof sometimes. Buzz could be a bit of a maniac. And then Michael Collins knows the other two get the glory. There's this phrase that they use, which is amiable strangers. Mm. And they were up there for way less time than you guys.
Yeah. I know you do. You get on differently with other crew members. You're up there with six people in total, but only three of you stay together for the whole 6 months. When I got on board, Scott Kelly was our commander. He was staying up there for a year. He was already 8 months into his year-long mission at that point, which is a crazy length of time to spend on the space station, along with Misha Kornienko, one of his Russian colleagues, and Sergei Volkov, and all military pilots. And what was funny, on Friday nights, we'd go down to the Russian segment and have a meal together and sort of talk about the week.
Like a pub?
It's just
like
a pub
up there.
Well, it's nice just to kind of get together. You've been working so hard, you're very busy during the week, and often you'll actually work as an individual. So it's nice at the end of the week just to down tools
very carefully so they don't float off. And
I love how you've stuck to a Friday night as well.
Yes, yeah.
Come on then, guys, let's go down the pub on a Friday night. Do you know, as a working week, I love that you still do not lose time.
It's easy to do.
It's not a Monday or Tuesday. I mean, it's just space.
Yeah, and if you're not on your watch, you would do that. I mean, you see 16 sunrises and sunsets a day, so it's very easy to get out of sync if you didn't just
hang on. I can't get my head around that one. You see 16 sunrises and sunsets a day.
Yes. Yeah.
Can either of you help me out with this one?
Well, don't look at me.
So, hang on. This is going to be really stupid. I know. I can sense it. There's one sun, is there?
Yes.
There's one big sun. Just clarifying that. Why does it rise and set 16 times?
So the sun stays where it is, and we're going around the Earth every 90 minutes. So every hour and a half, we will do a complete orbit of planet Earth. So that takes us 45 minutes of night, 45 minutes of day. So that's 16 sunrises and sunsets in a 24-hour period.
Do you go like dark and light all the time?
Yeah.
Every 45 minutes?
Every 45 minutes. So we can...
It's up and down,
you can
up
be,
and down.
You can be having an 11 o'clock coffee break and it's pitch black over Indonesia. And then 30 minutes later, it'll be broad sunlight over the Bahamas. So you're looking out the hatch and you have to get used to this light and dark coming all the time. Makes it quite hard to get to sleep in the first couple of weeks on board because your whole body is kind of out of sync.
That just blows my mind. 45 minutes to just get around the world.
Halfway around
the world. It took me an hour and a half to get here today.
From Sussex.
Do you know what I mean? I'm going to have to, probably not right now, you know, they've got other things to worry about, but at some point I'll be putting in a complaint to Southern Rail saying that this is taking way too long. Something needs to be done here.
Joe, do you think that situation that Tim's just described, would you make a good astronaut on the ISS? Like your small talk, I'm guessing, Tim, must be amazing. So you're saying to Yuri, how's things, Yuri? And he's looking at you with a blank face. Thinking, oh, 6 months with Yuri. It's got to be... This is going to be a long time.
You hit the nail on the head there, because with Yuri, that often happens. He's a man of few words.
He's got no chat at all, Yuri.
Oh, no. Let's hope he doesn't listen. It's fine.
He's a great guy. He was on his sixth mission to space. He's a hugely experienced cosmonaut, but he is a man of a few words. And a lot of the Russians are like that. But, you know, Sergei Volkov was up there. He wasn't. He was a great party
life and
party
soul
animal. Life and soul, yeah. Friday nights he'd be master of ceremonies at the dinner table.
The picture that sticks in my mind from that bit though is that you said dinner table And immediately I'm like, how have you got a mahogany six-seater tape, like round, and you've all got the chairs and they're just floating around up there and you just go, all right, guys, it's dinner time now, or supper, or is it? You know, you can't tell because the sun keeps coming up.
Yeah.
You go, right, now's time to eat, and you all grab a chair and then you all grab the table and you like lock it down somehow. Is that how it works, or have I got that completely wrong?
Not quite, yeah.
No mahogany.
No mahogany, right. No. It's all kind of aluminium. I nearly said aluminum. Aluminium.
Aluminum.
Metal.
Yes.
The metal dining table.
Yeah.
No, so it's all lightweight alloy stuff we have up there. And it's covered in Velcro so that you can just stick your cans of food or your pouches, whatever it is, you stick it to the table so it doesn't float off, your cutlery as well. And there's an electrical food warmer at the side. Takes about 20 minutes to warm up your camping pouches. It's just camping food that we have up there, pre-packaged NASA stuff, and a hot water dispenser, so you have a cup of tea and soup and noodles and off you go. But Friday nights are different because we get 10% of our food allocation is what they call bonus food. So I had chicken curry. I had sausage sizzles, sausages, gravy and onions. That was another meal. I had a nice salmon dish there, beef dish, and some desserts as well. So on a Friday night, I would be bacon sarnies as well, which was, they were fantastic, you know, bread that would live in a can and come out still nice and warm, buttery and tasting fresh.
Oh.
So Friday nights, I'd be dishing out the bacon sarnies as starters.
Not too many, though. Surely you can have half tonight, yeah. You know, because you want...
All right, Yuri. Whoa.
Just one bite, I said. Oh, no. I was picturing a kebab, so no kebabs.
No kebabs, I'm afraid, no. But the chicken curry was good.
Oh, okay,
that was nice, yeah.
Is it true that in the ISS that there's a massive issue with crumbs? Or you can't eat anything with crumbs?
Yes. Yeah, the crumbs are a nightmare.
Why?
Because they just go everywhere. They won't settle to the floor without gravity to pull them down. So they just they float in the atmosphere. And the problem comes when you get something in your eye, because you'll be floating along and then you get crumbs in your eyes.
Yuri's crumbs.
See them. Yeah, yeah, which is not pleasant.
Yuri hasn't got pleasant crumbs.
Well, it's not just... I mean, the crumbs is actually the least of your worries, because it's when it comes to things like nail clippings or people taking off their socks. And because you don't walk, your feet don't feel any pressure on the ground, all of the dead skin that we all have on our feet, after about 3 months in space, your dead skin is falling off in flakes and chunks. So when
you're like snakes.
Yeah, absolutely. When you come back after a 6 month mission, the soles of your feet are like baby's feet. They're absolutely smooth.
They feel nice at the end.
Best pedicure you could ever want.
So ignore the flaky skin floating around it. Just think about the end goal. That's what I'm thinking of. You're getting weirded out by the skin bit. I'm getting really excited about your soft feet
but
after 6 months.
The problem is, though, that you get the hard skin comes on the top of your feet, because we're always hooking our feet underneath rails to keep our feet stabilized so that we're not having any pressure on the soles of feet, but the top of our feet's become like lizard feet and they're disgusting. So it's like a role reversal, smooth underside, hard on top. But to be a good crew member, you just want to make sure personal hygiene, you know, take your socks off next to the ventilation fan, the return fan that's got the filters there.
Where's that going, though? Is that just going out in space?
No. Everything is being recycled. Everything.
What are you recycling your stinky feet fumes into?
Well, we have some really good systems up there that scrub the air, clean the air. They remove all the moisture from the air. So all of the sweat, all of the condensation you're breathing out, all of that becomes drinking water the next day. It's the whole atmosphere is scrubbed and recycled. 90% of all of our urine is recycled within 24 hours. So it's just goes back into the whole system.
What?
Yeah.
90% of your urine is recycled.
Yep. Back into drinking water. So it goes through this filtration process, purification process. It's iodinized and then that's removed, and then it becomes the next day. It's pretty tasty, actually. It's, you know, you wouldn't know any different.
Do you get your own urine, or might you get like...
You get everybody's. You get, you know, it's a real bonding experience.
Tim.
Those Friday nights when we're, you know, we're passing around the tea bags and...
I did originally have a few questions that would be classed as mildly inappropriate or toilet chat and stuff like that. And I thought, no, I'm getting to meet Tim Peake here. I want to talk to him about not serious stuff, but, you know, stuff that's not just how do you do a shit in space or something like that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And yet it's actually you that has brought up all the minging stuff so far with the skanky snake feet and you're drinking your own piss.
Yeah,
and
sorry
about I don't know where to go with it. I thought I'd be all right with it, but just I don't know where to go with
give
it.
Give you some of the realities of living in space. Yeah.
Can I ask you, since we're on this topic, you know when you go on an aeroplane, Joe,
yeah,
and you're in economy, sometimes you find yourself with a little bit of a build-up of wind, more so in an aeroplane. Is that because it's a pressurised cabin? I don't know. So that happens 12 miles up. If you're 250 miles up, Tim, is it that much worse?
It's not. I mean, it happens in an aircraft because they reduce the pressure in an aircraft cabin to about 7,000 feet. But in a spacecraft, we build them strong enough that we can maintain one atmosphere, so we don't lose any pressure. So even on the way up in a rocket to space, your ears aren't popping, your stomach's not feeling bloated or anything like that. It's the same pressure inside as it is back here on Earth.
Your ears don't pop going up to space?
No, no, not at all.
All right, I've just got to get these out of my system, if that's okay. So this is all true, is it? As in, you've actually been to space?
Okay, yes.
You've actually been up there? And there's people like you and other astronauts. Oh, you said cosmonaut earlier. What's the difference between an astronaut and a cosmonaut?
It's just a Russian astronaut. They're called cosmonauts.
Okay.
Chinese taikonauts.
Because it blows my mind to actually believe it. And it's still, there's all these conspiracies that the moon landing never actually happened.
I get a lot from flat earthers, you know, I get a lot of, on social media, and it just, I don't actually interact with them at all because there's no point, because people who want to believe the earth is flat will believe the earth is flat.
So it's not
so
flat.
Stay in your happy world. You know,
so you're
stay
allowing
in your happy
that,
world where the earth is flat and leave the rest of us to get on with it.
Just on record, it's not flat.
What I love about that conspiracy theory, I almost wish it was. Because in order for that to be a conspiracy theory, all of the engineers, all of the pilots, all of the people, you know, navigate around the world on ships, you know, it goes on and on. Everybody
it's
who
quite
builds,
a big one.
You build a gas pipeline, design a bridge over a river. I mean, everybody knows that the Earth is round and we have to take it into account for so many things. So it would almost be hilarious to think that the Earth was flat and 90% of the Earth's population would have to be in on it.
This view you get, Tim, when you're in the International Space Station, probably the best view that anyone will ever see. What I find amazing is a lot of astronauts, when they see the Earth, it seems to do something to all of them. There's a guy, Joe, called Edgar Mitchell, who was one of the astronauts on Apollo 14. He had this almost mystical experience after being on the moon. He said he felt an intelligence in the universe. He felt connected to it. It changed him so totally that he thought he was having ESP conversations with people back on, like extrasensory perception.
Thank you.
Conversations with his mates back on Earth. He got into faith healing. He believed in UFOs. It seems to do something, Tim, to all you men and women who have been up into space. You come back and something's changed.
You're absolutely right. You do get a changed perspective. And I felt it was really strong outside on a spacewalk, floating there at the edge of the space station, you know, watching the Earth go into the shadow. And that was a very, very surreal moment, very serene. And the juxtaposition there was you almost feel like you're an imposter. You feel like you shouldn't be there. We this is not a view that humans should be looking at. But at the same time, it feels completely comfortable and completely natural and very serene. You do not feel, it's not like the hair-raising adrenaline rush of a free-fall parachute. It's very, very peaceful.
Do you believe in God?
I don't, no. I'm a scientist at heart. I'm agnostic. I call myself agnostic because I think that if you're an atheist, then you actually believe in something. You believe that God doesn't exist. And then if you, you know, you're religious, you have faith, then you believe in some sort of, you know, God. And I think the jury is out. There is so much we do not know about this universe. In fact, we only know 5% of matter in the universe. That's 5% of the universe. The rest of it we call dark energy and dark matter. We have no idea what it is. So it's way too early to start having a position on what really is driving this universe, how it came into existence, what this universe is all about.
5%? We only know 5%.
How do we know we only know 5% if we don't know what 100% is?
Oh, smart. Very smart. I like what you've
done there. That's a very good question. We estimate that, knowing what the way that the galaxies work and the expansion of the universe, we reckon, 5% is visible matter is what we can see. So when you look up on a starry night, that's a fraction of actually what the universe is composed of.
Emotionally, so as a rugby player, I've spoken to a couple of boys, South Africans, unfortunately, that actually won the World Cup in 2019. Oh, God, it cracks
me. I can tell you're getting emotional now.
So that's their pinnacle. That's our pinnacle, is winning the World Cup. That's what we strive for. That's where we're going. And one of them, who I played against recently, is just so disinterested. Just can't be bothered. He's still playing, got no motivation, no inspiration to drive, because he's reached his summit. He's reached his peak.
It's nice, yeah.
That is your real name, is it?
It is, yeah. It did change.
Are you sure?
I promise you.
It's convenient that your name's Tim Peak, and you... Anyway. Yeah. So they've reached their summit, and I'm guessing going to space is a pretty big deal. Is there part of you that's, when you did come back from that you really deflated? You're like, well, what now then? I've done that. Yeah. I've done it now. What do I do now?
Yeah, you do feel quite flat afterwards. And there was, there was a moment saying goodbye to Tim and Yuri, and this was just a couple of hours after landing. And we knew that was the end of the mission, and there was a line being drawn underneath it, and we would all three of us be going off to different lives, and that was quite sad. It was closure, and we'd spent 6 months, living and working side by side and having this great experience, and so it was sad to kind of say goodbye to them and to bring the mission to an end.
You strike me, Tim, as an unbelievably well-adjusted, balanced person. But some people who've done what you've done have gone off the rails. Buzz Aldrin became an alcoholic, I think. Was there ever a point where some of that darkness was trying to get in, and with your mental strength and your training, you sort of looked at it and then just pushed it away?
I think you do have to look after yourself, yes, throughout training, throughout the mission, and even now in the post-flight period. And I'm a family man. I've got two young boys, and they're my world. And there have been times when that has been a very tough balance. The time I've spent away from my kids growing up, I found that extremely hard. Actually, I didn't find the 6 months in space so hard. I equated that to just like being in the military, 6 months in Afghanistan, off you go, operational missions, 6 months in space. And it was probably easier for the family to deal with my being away during that time as well, because they could just get on. They knew where I was. I wasn't going anywhere else. and they could get on with their lives. What was more disruptive was the 2.5 years before that, when I was just coming and going. I'd be home for a week, I'd be off for 6 weeks, I'd be back for a week.
That resonates with me, because with rugby, going back and forth, obviously it's not quite as far. Penny Hill in Surrey isn't, how many did you say, 250
miles up,
slightly less, but takes longer apparently, so anyway, get over that. And I've found that hard throughout my career, leaving my family, because I'm a family man as well. They're my world.
Yeah.
And your wife must be a saint.
Yes.
To have put up with it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And not have that resentment towards you, because you're ultimately trying to chase your dream, trying to chase your goal.
Yeah.
The difference is there's a real fear that it's unlikely, but there's a chance that you don't come back.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be too down on it, but it's different from me going away for a rugby camp. You're going away to a space station. What are your boys saying? Are they like, hang on a minute, Dad?
Yeah, that the kind of saying goodbye to the boys as I went off to the launch pad, that was hugely emotional. And again, as I kind of mentioned, there's that voice in the back of your head when you're sitting in the rocket. Well, when I was kind of saying goodbye to them and literally looking through the window of the bus and just thinking, don't let this be the last time. Don't let this be the last time. There's an element of selfishness, I think, in exploration, in what we do. And I think there has been throughout the years, but I'm also passionate about it. And I think we need to explore. We've needed explorers throughout history. We've needed people who push the boundaries, and we will do in the future. And, if I'm not prepared to do it, then why should I expect somebody else to? And it's in my nature. Why should I just sit at home and do something different and lie to myself?
You might find this, Joe, when you go away for a trip, with the kids, it always helps if you promise to bring them back a souvenir. So what? Come on, Tim. So you get back and you've gone, boys, I've got an amazing screwdriver that works with no gravity. So actually, just not much used to here, boys.
They haven't got their souvenirs yet. I took them a watch up, which they'll get both for their 18th birthdays. So that'll be the souvenirs that they'll get. But every week we get to have a video conference. So that was a lot of fun because, you know, their attention span's only about 5 minutes. But for that 5 minutes, I'd be growing water bubbles and drinking it through a straw or playing with M&Ms up there and bouncing them off the roof and eating them and doing somersaults. And so and then taking them for a little tour around the space station, showing them out the hatch. So they loved all that. I mean,
I love how you said earlier there was an issue with crumbs. Like, that's a big problem. Mm. And then you've just willy-nilly gone, yeah, I'm just blowing water bubbles and M&Ms just throwing them around.
For the boys.
Just for the boys on FaceTime. Yeah. Just like, all right, lads.
We had this plastic ball of M&Ms. In fact, this is one of the stories I mentioned in the book, that I was coming back from one of those video calls, having been playing with these M&Ms in a plastic ball. And I was flying through the hatch because I was late to get to work on the next project. And this plastic ball clipped the top of the hatch and split open. And about 1,000 M&Ms went flying down the Russian segment.
Yeah, Yuri's like...
I see you, for fuck's sake, dude.
He's getting fucking peppered. It's like, oh, there's a red one, there's black one.
We were finding them for months to come, literally up until the last day.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Up until the last day, there was the odd M&M floating around. Floating around, there's probably still some up there right now floating around. not my finest hour.
Tim, would you be able to introduce the ads as if you were doing a call back to Mission Control?
I'll try. Ready? Beep. Houston Station on Space to Ground 1. We'll be back after this ad break. Beep.
Oh, I feel like I'm there.
This is the story of Whitney Houston, of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
That feeling.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.
Jump into the beeps. Beep.
Welcome back.
Oh, maybe Russian. How'd you say welcome back in Russian?
Oh, just say privyet, which is hi.
Privyet.
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 Beep. Privyet.
Beep. Have you stitched me up?
No, it's just hi. It's just hello. It's easier. Easier to say.
I'm worried.
These Russian listeners disgusted throwing their phones down. Yeah. He said what?
It's a shame because I was really aiming for the... Russian demographic.
Right, me and Joe arrive on the ISS, Tim.
Yeah.
What's our first day look like? What time's the alarm call?
Alarm call, 6 o'clock. Check laptop.
Quite a bit punchy, isn't it?
Yeah, spend an hour just kind of catching up on what's about to happen, because lots changes overnight when you're sleeping. People in Mission Control are changing your day. So you go to sleep thinking it's going to be one thing. You wake up, there might be some changes. So you spend an hour just making sure the day is all planned out. 7 o'clock, grab a quick breakfast. 7:15, you have your first tag up around the world. So it's called the Daily Planning Conference. We speak to Houston, and then we go to Huntsville, Alabama, talked about our science for the day. Then we talked to Munich. Then we talked to Scuba, just outside Tokyo. And then we finish with Moscow. So quick round the world to all the Mission Control centres. Only takes about 15 minutes. So 7:30, you're off, ready to start your day. And you have a schedule all planned out, lots of different activities. And you have this red line, which is just marching across the screen, which is horrible. It's just the timeline, but you have to stick to schedule, you know. And if you're ahead of schedule, that's good. If you're behind schedule, it's going to be a bad day.
Why? Why are you up there? And what are you doing? Like, what is the purpose of us being in space? Because from my very small knowledge... originally from a film I watched, what was it, The Right Stuff you recommended?
I was telling you to watch The Right Stuff. Yeah,
yeah, so there was a line in it that was like, if we rule the air now, if we rule space, we'll rule the world. So is that the point? Are we sending stuff up there to rule the world? Or are we sending the stuff up there to find aliens? Are we sending stuff up there to find alternative fuels? Why are you going up there? That's kind of what I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good question. And the space station is very much... about peaceful purposes. There's nothing military about it. It's all about the national space agencies doing scientific research. So that's NASA, that's the European Space Agency, Roscosmos from Russia, Canadian Space Agency, and Japanese space agencies. So those five organizations have built the space station and run it as a science laboratory. And the reason it's a fantastic place for science is because we're in weightlessness, and everything on Earth for 4 billion years has evolved in a 1G environment. And so if you take things into a 0G environment, you know, any scientist knows, you change the parameter, you're going to get some interesting results. Some of the things that we're looking at are things like medical research. So you can grow very pure, very large protein crystals, which enables us to develop drugs for diseases like motor neurone disease or Parkinson's disease. We can study viruses up there. We can study metal alloys. So for engine turbine blades, for example, we can make metals in space that you cannot make on Earth. They're very, very light, very elastic, very strong. And whilst we can't make them on Earth, what we do is we bring them back, and then engineers at Rolls-Royce or whoever can study them and try and get as close to that as possible. So we've been able to make engines much more efficient, much more fuel efficient, much lighter. So probably about 60% of our time is science. But then the space station's 20 years old this year, or it's been occupied for 20 years this year. So we have to maintain it. So there'll be maintenance activities and then a couple of hours of fitness every day as well, because in space, our bodies want to get very lazy and relax and adjust to weightlessness. And so you can let your body do that, but you're going to lose muscle mass, you'll lose bone density, and your cardio will go completely out of shape, and it'll be very punishing when you get back to Earth. So we exercise to stay fit for coming back to Earth.
So have you got a separate gym? So, you know, you said you've got a dining room.
Yep, yep.
You've got the Russians section. Well, it's full of M&Ms because you've lobbed them all down there. And then have you got a separate pod that's your gym? Have you got, like, a barbell? Have you got a cross trainer? How on earth are you exercising in space, basically? Because you did a marathon, didn't you?
I did, yes. So we have a treadmill. It's pretty tricky to run, actually, because it's very narrow. So you have to really, every footfall, you have to watch where you're going. So it's not the easiest thing to run. And you have a bungee system that keeps you strapped down so that you don't float off. So that's the treadmill. We have a bike machine, which is simply a set of pedals because you don't need a seat. So we just clip our feet with these bike shoes into the pedals. And then you just float in there. You can, you know, hold on to the side of the space
station. It's just pedals.
Just pedal. Yeah, just jump on and pedal. But that's probably the best cardio workout we get. It's really tough. And then for the multi-gym, it uses two vacuum cylinders. So the vacuum cylinders give us the resistance. So we can do bench press, bicep curls, squats. We focus a lot on squats because it's all that weight-bearing stuff that we want to do. The thing that's really hard to exercise is your core. So we come back and, you know, we're in good physical shape, but then you go to bend over and try and pick up a suitcase or something, and you realise you've got no core strength.
You've got pot belly.
Yeah, pot belly, no core strength.
I struggle with that on Earth, mate. So. You spoke earlier about your first meal being a bacon sarnie when you went up there.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about having those thoughts in your mind when you're about to take off and leaving your family behind. That week or that month before going away, do you treat it a little bit like death row? not that you then start walking around like handcuffed all the time and you're like, oh, I've got to pretend I've done that. What I mean is, do you treat it like, well, there's a possibility I might not come back, so I want to tick off some of these bucket list ideas with the kids, and I'm going to have a Chinese.
Is that not a bit prosaic? Have a Chinese? I thought you were going to say, like, bungee jump with the kids.
Sorry.
Go get a takeaway.
So I was thinking of the food bit. That would be my last meal. That would be my... Do you treat it like that?
No. I mean, you do have occasional thoughts, like I said, when saying goodbye and the rest of it, and on the rocket, you're aware that you're doing something that's high risk, but you certainly don't spend much time thinking about it or dwelling about it. So the week before launching, you're in quarantine anyway, so you're not in any position to be ticking off any bucket lists. But no, it's actually, you know, it's a period, it's quite pleasant because you've been so busy, you've been manic, running around the world, doing all this training and exams and everything. And that last week before you fly, you're in quarantine, nobody can get to you, and it's a chance to just have some peace and quiet, get your admin sorted out before going to space. Your family do come down to Baikonur so you can see them. I was able to see the children behind the glass. They weren't able to, you know, have any contact because by that point, they're microbiological hazards, aren't they? Little kids in wintertime in Russia. So I was very fortunate because the night before we flew to space, I spoke to Dr. Savin, who is our Russian surgeon, and he's in charge of quarantine. So if anybody takes the virus up to the space station, you know, it's his neck on the block. And I'd got to know him quite well, and he knew my family quite well by that point. And I said, Dr. Savin, listen, it's cold outside. Can we just go for a walk outside, maintain social distancing, as we all know by now, and just go for a walk with the family down, you know, Cosmonauts Grove and then back again? And he said, yeah, you can. So it was pitch black outside about 6 o'clock in the evening, minus 15 it must have been. And just took the boys out, and Rebecca and me, and we went for this family walk down Cosmonaut Grove. And that was wonderful because it just felt like a bit of normality. No glass, no quarantine. That was very special. And I was very, very grateful that he gave me that opportunity.
Now, Tom was going to bring it up, but I'll bring it up. I've got trust issues. I do. I'm working on them, and I'm using this platform as a chance to build up trust with various different people in different walks of life. However, this is what's going on in my mind at the moment. Your answer when I go, are there aliens? Whatever answer you come back with, I'm going to think you're lying. So yeah. I'm going to go
so
with
I'm,
it anyway.
I can't win, can so, I?
No, I'm going to go with it anyway.
I'm going to lose it from
are there computer. Aliens up there? Or if not, do you believe there are aliens up there?
So the answer to the first question is, I don't know, which you're going to
so
think
there's
I'm
a
lying.
Chance. Yeah, yeah.
And the answer to the second part of the question is, I think there are.
Oh, God, no.
Honestly, the chances of there not being life elsewhere in the universe are so, I think, so remarkably small that it would have to be an incredible anomaly for us to be the only life in the universe. In fact, some very intelligent scientists came up with an equation which actually spells out, you know, the number of galaxies in the universe, the number of planets around each star in each galaxy, and then the number of planets that would have in the habitable zone in terms of liquid water. And it comes down to the probability that there's probably 100,000 civilizations in the Milky Way alone, let alone any other galaxy in the universe.
There's 100,000 different types of aliens in the Milky Way.
The potential for
100,000 different.
What I find really interesting about Earth is that actually biogenesis happened really quickly on Earth. As soon as the Earth was suitable for life, you know, life sprang up. And then it took another 3 billion years for that single-celled life form to become complex life. So I think complex life, intelligent life, I think that is much rarer. But I think life's prevalent everywhere throughout the universe. I think intelligent life, yes, it's there, it's out there. It's probably a lot rarer. And the two problems we have is time and distance. Firstly, the scale of the universe is so vast. How are we ever going to get there if we want to get there and reach out and communicate? And then time span, you know, does an intelligent civilization's, you know, short moment in this universe coincide with our short moment in this universe? You know, when on the scale of billions of years, we could just keep on missing each other. And then as Stephen Hawking said, do we really want to reach out anyway? You might regret what you find.
A friend of mine actually used, when he said, why do you want to find out aliens then? It will only be bad. And what do you mean? He said, imagine in your lounge, there's this colony of fleas. And I went, right. And those fleas start building like houses and towers in your lounge. I'm like, right, yeah, where's this going? And he's like, so we're those fleas and you, the people, are the aliens. Why do you want to find out that the aliens exist? You'd better off not knowing. You're better off not going down there. Yeah. Now, I question his analogy, and I'm slightly embarrassed that I've used it, but it's the best I got.
Yeah. Look out here on Earth, as we're the, you know, the supposedly the most intelligent species on Earth, and how are we treating the species that are less intelligent than us?
Yes.
Oof.
Oh,
so
Tim.
So if Tim, we Tim, come Tim. Across a species that is more intelligent than us, how do we expect them to treat us?
So you've answered that really well for me, and we could speak for hours on that. But go back to the trust thing. How do I know that you haven't actually met them, the intelligent aliens out there? How do I know that you haven't? And they've gone, here, Tim, nice to meet you. Welcome up here. They've embraced your open arms, several of them probably. We'll let you in on some of our secrets. But when you go back down there, you're not allowed to say a fucking word. You can't say anything to anyone, okay? This is the promise. Or we'll use this super, super laser that they've developed. They probably use the same laser to build the pyramids. And they'll use that, just go, bing, and they'll just shoot you dead from space in Earth. How do I know that that's, that conversation hasn't taken place?
I love what goes on in your mind, Joe. I mean, you must, you know...
So it hasn't taken place.
It hasn't taken place. Would be a lot of fun if it had.
Why did you look away when you answered that? I'm struggling here.
Because you're not going to believe me, whatever I say, so I can't win.
You're right, but I don't know. Have you met an alien?
No.
All right, I'll have to take your word for it.
Promise.
Joey, we've got one thing left on our list, but I just feel terrible about asking it. It's that thing on the bottom of the list.
Fuck off. No, not doing it.
I'll do it.
If you do it, I'll leave.
No, I just think you should be able to discuss it. Like, we're all grown-ups.
Oh, I think I know what it is. No, we're not going there.
No, yeah. Well, I've read the vibe. I've got the vibe here, mate. We're not going there.
And, 185 days, though.
No, I think we've got enough. I think we can work it out for ourselves. It's a long time. It's fine. I actually discussed it with my wife beforehand. She was like, don't you fucking dare ask that. And I was like... Yeah, you're right.
So how many days in would you crack?
Yeah, that's what the people want to hear. They want to hear, yeah, fucking, no, I'm not doing that.
Well, we could sit here and I would quite happily talk to you, Tim, for the next 185 days, but you've got many better things to do.
Yeah, fuck it, especially if we're ending it like that. yeah, agreed. But I just want to say thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. On. A real pleasure. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Joe. Really has. I've loved it. Enjoyed it.
And your book's out now, isn't it? Limitless.
It is, yeah. Limitless is out now.
We were talking beforehand, because you've done three books already.
Yes.
Have you?
Yeah.
So you did a picture book. Second one was...
Ask an Astronaut,
the Q&A one.
Book, yep,
and
yep.
The third one was...
The Astronaut Selection Test Book.
And this one's a little bit more...
Well, this is the autobiography. So this is the whole life story. And actually, I really wanted to write about those early years and you know, the 18 years of my military career leading up to become an astronaut. Because I've spoken a bit about being an astronaut since being selected and since flying. But very rarely have people, you know, said, well, what does it take to get to become an astronaut? You know, there are so many funny stories in my military career. So it was a real pleasure to write about that.
I look forward to reading that one then.
Thank you. That was fantastic.
Guys. Thanks very much.
So much to talk about for me there, Joe. The first thing I want to say, though, is people don't talk to each other enough. We do want people to talk to each other. Specifically about this show would be great. If you did enjoy that chat as much as Joe and I enjoyed that chat, Joe, you're not smiling, but I think you enjoyed it.
I loved it.
Grow the show, please. Tell people about Joe's show.
Hashtag grow the show.
That was quite efficient for us.
Sorry.
Usually we talk nonsense for a bit before getting those sort of key messages. Yeah, we're getting better at this.
We're working with haste more. And now Steve's losing his shit because now we're talking nonsense. Back to the nonsense.
Not the show. Fuck the show. Back to the nonsense and we can...
Are you okay? My hair looks like hay. Let's talk.
Have you changed your mind at all? You said at the start that you would definitely rather be an astronaut than a rugby player. Has that changed your mind at all? All that stuff about spending time with Yuri and he's not great at conversation.
No, by the sounds of it, Yuri doesn't converse deep enough for me. But, you know, that wouldn't be the biggest thing put me off. Probably the 90% urine recycled to it.
Yeah, but you're a rugby player. You've drunk your own piss on a number of occasions.
Yeah, fair enough. Would I be an astronaut or a rugby player? Astronaut, because there was something in his eye. There was a twinkle in his eye when I asked him about the aliens that told me he's met one. So I want to be Tim Peake. I want to be Tim because... 99% of me believes he knows more than he's letting on, and that is a lot because he's let on a lot.
Right, we'll be back next week with more chat and more nonsense, another guest. In the meantime, if you do fancy another podcast, I would recommend Death of a Rockstar. It's presented by the legendary Elroy Spoonface Powell. Download episodes about Otis Redding, George Michael, Whitney Houston and more. I really like this series, Joe. I'm a bit biased.
I'm involved with it.
There's a new episode every Thursday. Search for Death of a Rockstar. And Joe, do you know who we've got on next week?
Otis Redding.
Alas, no, he died at the age of 26.
Which you can find out if you listen to...
67. Have I ruined
the show? Death of a Rockstar.
He wasn't rock, though, was he?
He was soul, deep soul.
So it should be Death of a Soul Star.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's not that many. Well, you could do Marvin Gaye, but then maybe rock in the broadest sense. Boom, 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 boom,
bang, boom, bang, bang, bang. Grow the show, dum, dum, dum. You grow the show, dum, dum, dum. For me and Tom, dum, dum, dum. Fucking do it now, dum, dum.
It's a teacher next week, by the way. We've got a teacher. All the things you ever wanted to ask a teacher about, you know, the things that teachers talk about in the staff room, what school trips are like when kids are trying to buy flick knives, a whole lot.
Wow.
Next week, we have a teacher from Essex. Tune in.
Well, it's a podcast. Don't really tune in. You download it, but... It's not a radio show.
Download it.
Crowd Network. A place where you belong. Sports Social Podcast Network.